Hello, everybody, and welcome to the e-learning scenario design podcast with Anis Abramowitz. Hope you're having a fabulous day, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. How are you? So, okay, today, let's talk about it. Oop, robins are fighting. Let's talk about this elusive return on investment. Conversations out there are not so great. And let me tell you this. I have never, this is the truth, never talked to anybody who is satisfied with the measurement that their organization or the organizations that they were consulting for was actually doing on the impact of their training. And some organizations don't do it at all. Some try and it falls by the wayside. To be honest with you, most organizations, what they do is the typical, if they do it at all. This is what they do. They'll, one, have a survey at the end of the experience. Two, have a survey a couple weeks after the experience, maybe 6 months after the experience. But in essence, all of those are smile sheets. And one of the things that you really clearly have to realize, and I'm going to go into what I mean by a smile sheet, is that the data that we're gathering is absolutely useless to us. And in some cases, extremely futile for improving any aspect of that delivery, whether it's before or after or during, right? Okay, so first off, let's talk about the smile sheets, because I think people really just, I don't know, they don't get it because we're kind of in our bubble or something. When was the last time you sent out a smile sheet and said on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being very satisfied, 2, you know, 10 being very dissatisfied, how would you rate this training? And somebody says, very satisfied. And then the next person says, very satisfied. Okay, and then the next person says, very dissatisfied. What does that mean? You have no idea. Very satisfied is very subjective. Some people are very satisfied when it goes by quickly. Some people are very satisfied when they've had a good coffee in the morning and they happen to be now taking your training. So the very satisfied is not even tied to anything you did, you know. Some people are very satisfied because they thought it was fun. Some people are very satisfied because they thought it was, you know, unique and new. You know, yeah, you updated last year's compliance training. They're so excited because they've been there for a decade and you finally did something to update it. This is great. Now, there's people who are very dissatisfied. They're very dissatisfied because they had their dog just died. Very dissatisfied, looking at everything as through the lens of suck. Very dissatisfied because they're getting fired and they just want to let everybody know and ruin everything at the company. They're very dissatisfied because they really are frustrated. You're giving them the same info over again and they thought you'd respect their time a bit more. Lots of reasons, right? How can you ever take something as very satisfied and very dissatisfied and actually turn it into data for you to use? Crazy, right? And we do this all the time. I see Likert, and they're called Likert scale survey questions, without actually even you defining what that means. What does very satisfied mean? And to be honest with you, I suggest you do not use this question at all, because it has no meaning. It's all subjective and gives you no, like, it might give, you know, somebody out there data like, hey, 75% of the people who went through this module were very satisfied. Yes. Okay. What does that mean? Absolutely nothing. It just sits as a check mark, you know, on somebody's desk, and they can say they fulfilled their quota. Next year, let's try and make it 80. Woo! All right. I'll try and come up with some random strategy. I know we'll add more beyond graphics. We'll add some animation. Right? It gives you nothing. Am I frustrating you yet? So one of the things you have to think about is, what can I do and what is within my control that will actually allow me to somehow improve my delivery, improve the results we're getting. Because when we say ROI, and I just had a conversation with a wonderful human being 2 days ago, and she watched my live where I was really like, you know, we're thinking a little short term, right? We're thinking a little short term. When we say ROI, we think, you know, what is this going to turn into for us in a month, right? What's the dividend that is going to pay out, right? Like even dividend stocks don't pay out that fast. So then you think, okay, so, you know, we think a little short term, and Anna, that's easy for you to say on your little soapbox, but how can we actually, you know, when you're in the real world, and I apparently am not in the real world in corporate land, people demand ROI. And I actually say that's absolute BS, to be honest with you. I've worked in organizations that have like, you know, corporate is, they are like uber corporate, right? And really what they did is they had money to spend. They had allocated budgets, and the challenge forever for training, especially because they use smile sheets, has been to prove their ROI. And it's never been proven. The only thing I've seen data is as far as like, nobody says our training reduced mistakes by 80%. That's super rare, and it's usually only done in safety training organizations, or in like industrial organizations where there actually have people working, and they need to maintain a zero casualty or a zero incident type of things. But then they have all these other things in place to actually help support that, because they realize that it's not going to be an e-learning module that's going to make people safe. Alone, right? It's not going to be an interactive story about how Jim really messed up his friend's life because he didn't, you know, shut the door and use a special lock. That's one kind of thing, but you still need personal protective equipment. You need job aides on site. You need people who are safety quality managers. You need people to look at if somebody's sick. They're like, you got to go home. You're a danger to other people. All those things, right? So, now let's talk about what we can do in our tiny sphere of influence when it comes to assessment. When it comes to getting, when I say assessment, I mean figuring out what worked and what didn't. Guess what? You have power here. It's not huge, but it gives you some opportunities to benchmark, and it gives you some opportunities to get some data so you can improve the things that you have control over, which in the end, it might just be the e-learning module. But let's check that out. So one of my students is a learning manager at a call center. I like to use examples because they're way more tangible than me going, you should. I'm basically, you know, I'm shooting on you. It's so unpleasant because it's like, yeah, who, you know, give me an example. Where does this work? So one of my students is a manager at a very distributed organization. They have call centers all over the world. And she realized that what was happening is that people were getting they had to work with three separate systems. And I never got to learn these systems because it is private information. But we know that the systems are relevant. What actually matters is the fact that a lot of these people, when they're talking to a customer, right, what happens is they're afraid to give the kind of information that the customer would not like. And also, because they assume certain things, they give some knee-jerk reaction advice, or they do some things for customers to appease them without realizing that it actually is a costly error, or it actually doesn't work on the, you know, if the customer's stuck at an airport and you're doing something and you do it wrong, they're not going to get out of that airport, and they're just going to call back, and they're going to be very, very, very angry with you or somebody else, right? So she crafted an interactive story that had multiple purposes, but one of the main ones was, hey, can we help these people build confidence in dealing with these very common situations that people mess up on? And also, can we help reinforce the fact that they have to dig a little deeper and always check, you know, the resources on time because our protocols change so quickly? And so one of the things she did is she said, okay, she went to the Q&A team, which is actually in any call center you have, you can ask for that data and say, okay, can you help me identify for rookies or whatever, you know, rookies, most common costly mistakes, and then, you know, maybe seasoned people, most common costly mistakes, see where they align, right? Sometimes there's an overlap. And she made her training a representation of the mistakes that most new hires make right when they hit the floor in the call center. And so that was, you know, those scenarios were based on real events or real data and supported by real customer scenarios, right? And so now this is where your data points come in, because here's some strategies. The one thing you probably have access to data about is how people answered those questions, and also how they and so, you know, just to get rudimentary here, you know, for scenario one, really, did they get A, B, or C? Scenario two, did they get A, B, or C? Also, how many times did they go through and correct, right? On second try, did they get? Did they try again and mess up again, right? So what that does is, first, she's working from the data that the quality managers gave her as far as common errors, right? So she's working, she picked like the 20% that's going to have the most impact on clients, customers, and success. So then she's able to look at the data from each question as the people hit the floor. So one of the things that she's doing is they're going through a 2-week training, or maybe longer, I'm not sure. They're going through onboarding. And then at the end of that onboarding, the culmination of all the training, she's basically giving them this mastery kind of test, which is actually an interactive story with a character. And this person has to basically make all these decisions, right, about difficult customers, and also meet their quota and also meet customer satisfaction. So all these things in balance, right? Reinforcing a couple of things. But now she can look at the data and say, okay, and I'm talking about like question by question, point by point. All right, now, and statistically, you probably need at least 50 new people to go through it to have, you know, some sort of valid data. Like you have less than that, it's kind of, you know, it's just not as accurate, right? So if 50 people have gone through it and you see that in question A, most people on their first try pick B, right? Pick this way to handle the situation. What does she now have? Now, this is what's amazing. The first thing you're going to think is, wait a minute. This person has gone through 2 weeks of training and now they're making this mistake. And all of them are, you know, the propensity is they're all making these mistakes. Okay. What does that mean to you? We got to go back to the training, right? And say, hey, can we fix this up? What's going on here? So that's one way of using that data. And what's amazing too is she can say, you know what? Maybe what we should do is we should include more opportunities for them to practice this particular decision. So let's put, you know, let's put maybe more opportunities for them to practice this even after they leave the training, and maybe a week after, give them some more of those questions. They don't even need to be wrapped up, but just one at a time. Give them that opportunity to solve it and see if they've improved. See if they've, it's use it as a refresher, right? But what I'm trying to say is that you can strategically use the data from the training as a measurement of of something, right? It's not going to be ROI, but imagine if you can say, okay, right now our training is delivering these kinds of results where people mess up on half of the questions. And then you can use that data to improve the training experience and maybe incorporating more scenarios into the training so it's used throughout, more situations that deal with that particular error, and basically use it as your litmus test as to whether the training is actually being successful. And so if you set that benchmark now and say, okay, based on the results I'm going to get over the next 3 months, I'm going to improve the training, and then the results in the actual scenarios improve, you can actually say that you've reduced those errors because you've set a benchmark initially, right? And then, of course, at the same time, you could be going back to the QA team saying, okay, we're making these improvements and we're stressing these kinds of things. What are some ways that we can support people if they're still making the mistakes, what are some ways that we can either support them on the job, right? Of course, performance support. Maybe they're not able to find the procedures quickly, or it's not useful, or whatever it is, or in the moment it's mismatched or misnamed. Lots of things could go wrong, right? So what happens is you're now, because you've got a benchmark and QA team has a snapshot in time as well of what it was, let's say 3 months ago, you can look at those data points and say, okay, where are we? We've definitely revamped the training or added some elements to the training to reinforce some of these key ideas. Where are we now doing this in the workplace, right? And then you have some data then and say, listen, they're coming out and they're kicking butt. Like, look at this. We've improved the training over the past 3 months because these data points show us that they're actually the first, you know, when we first ran this, they were passing half and now they're passing all of them. It's awesome. But now they're still making those mistakes later on the floor. What can we do to do that? So to me, you got to work within your wheelhouse and you got to work within the data that you have. Now, you got to know, what can you improve? Because I think that a lot of people get enamored with formulas, and I sure did, enamored and kind of deluded. Because if I say, oh, I know this training with the goal of this training is going to reduce, increase retention, by 5% staff retention, right? Which is how long staff stay and don't quit. Now, I used to actually use those formulas and I taught those formulas because I thought they were valid. But then I realized that, like, if somebody quits, there are so many things that are outside of my control. And training is just one little piece of something. People don't stay. Have you ever, like, heard somebody say, yeah, I was going to quit, but the training was so good at this company that I decided to stay for an extra 5 years? No. Like, they quit because their boss sucks. They quit because of personal reasons. They quit because they're having a baby. Like, people leave all the time, right? So I can't affect that. What I can have control over, though, is what I can improve and what I know will be, based on the data that I'm getting, where can I have the most impact? So, I hope that was helpful to you. And it's interesting because in our community, we get faced with those questions. I mean, we all work in L&D, but I want us to be 100% no BS about what we're actually doing, what we have control over, and when somebody asks a question, we could say, well, just because you're asking the question, right, doesn't mean you're asking the right question. You're just asking a question that has always been asked because everybody else has been asking it, right? But what does that question really mean? And what are we looking for in terms of results? What does ROI actually mean, right? And where can I have, in my circle of influence, impact? And one of the things I want you to also consider is that, and I shared this quote yesterday, said, you know, if you can't do great things, do small things really well, or something like that. Oh my God, I just messed up. It's not a quote from me. It's from Napoleon Hill. Anyways, oh God. Good morning. But really, what I think is, when I talk to people who are, just overwhelmed by the return on investment question, they're thinking so huge, right? And it you can't like you know you have to think about you have to think about it like Elon Musk. So Elon, let's say, wants to get to Mars. He is not going to think about, all right, how do I, Mars, being on Mars and starting a colony. He's going to think about all the little steps, all the little things that have to be in place, right, for us to make it feasible to get to Mars. So sustainable energy, right, through solar, refining that, maybe creating, some, I don't know, people who can, interface with machines so they can have a more pleasurable trip and they can their brains can survive longer in space. Who knows? Like, I have no idea, right? But he's not gonna go, oh, okay, guys, we can't make the ship to Mars yet. Okay, let's give up, right? And that's how we're going. We're like, oh, we're not at Mars yet, so, and I can't really get there. Look at this. I got no ship, right? Think about the baby steps you can take and what's within your control. And there's quite a bit within your control. You just have to see it that way. Once you start seeing those opportunities, they will come up to you. And so if you're talking to a Q&A team and you're like, oh, this data is so confusing, ask questions. Like, people, if you ask for help, people will usually help you, especially those people who gather data. You'd be like, listen, I just need the top six things. Can you help me? Can you help me understand what's coming through? Of course they will. Usually Q&A teams have to put reports together for all kinds of people. They'll pull something together for you if you just ask, right? You just have to be polite and ask. And the other thing, little tip I wanted to leave you with is that sometimes, and one of my other students is doing it this way. What she's doing is, like, in the onboarding scenario, you can't necessarily give people, because it's quite sophisticated as far as what they're doing and what they're going to, like, interfacing with these three different systems. It's quite sophisticated, right? So you can't throw that in front of people on their first day because they'll probably get freaked out and leave. But if you already have some seasoned people, right, and you're actually using your interactive story as intended, which is as a catalyst to get them to do more training, right? Because you've got this training and they may not even be aware that they need it. Onboarding is actually something that is necessary, obviously. And also, you're probably onboarding people who have no clue. But let's say you have a repository for salespeople that is really, really good, right? And maybe they're making a lot of those rookie mistakes, like, I don't know, like, they're afraid to call, and when somebody says no, they take it personally, all kinds of stuff, right? You want to create an interactive story that's a catalyst to get them excited about the fact that they could actually be doing things better if they learned this special technique, and it happens so that you've invested all this time and effort into building all these awesome training modules for these salespeople to up their skill. But first, they need that interactive story to get them really excited about that journey, right? To get them sold on taking action and stepping out of their comfort zone. Really, that's what this is, right? So then this is what you can do. Because the only thing you have control over is, you can't say, oh, because of my module, people sold 10% more this year. Hello, like, so many things fall into that. Some people get sick. There's a virus and people can't sell. Like, you can't, right? Cannot control things. But what you can control is the data that you get and what you do as a result of that data. So think about this. If you have an interactive story and you have a benchmark right now, the benchmark is see how many people are accessing the sales courses right now. Then you craft an interactive story. One of the things is you can check is how many people, after they went through the interactive story, are now accessing more learning on the LMS related to the specific things you recommended that they check out after they finish the interactive story. There's one data point, right? So you can have, say, you can say people that did not, 3 months ago, we didn't have this interactive story. This was the average of people accessing it. Now, I found that the people who are going after they have this interactive story, And not everybody. Check the people who are going after the interactive story. Those people are now accessing training more often because they're sold on it. Like, they see it, and it's actually, you know, you've distributed this interactive story, got them engaged, and they're like, hey, you know, I think I'll check that out. Then what you want to do is you want to see the difference, right? So you get one kind of data point. Cool. That's awesome. Then you can check the difference between somebody who has not seen the interactive story and their progress through the sales modules. And then you can see, and if they finish and how far they get. And then you can see the difference between somebody who has gone through the interactive story, taking the same courses, and if they finish and their propensity for getting it done. There you go. Like, you got to be super scientific with some of this, right? You got to be looking at real things, not feelings, not thoughts. I mean, why are we crafting an interactive story? Yeah, we want to connect with them emotionally. We want to move them to action. We want to have them feel something. But when we're looking at the data, we're not going on gut feelings. We're going on real data, which is great because that's what's within your control. So the other thing you can think about is one more thing that you can actually use. So this one, this is another way to use this, okay? So you use your interactive story as the catalyst, right? To get people awakened to the ecosystem of awesome learning that is out there. Then, let's say even a month later, you tap those people again via email, whatever. Say, hey, you extract the scenarios. You can extract the scenarios. You don't have to have them go through the entire story again. Extract just the scenarios and create a separate module with just the scenario so you can gather the data. And see how they do. Compare the two. The thing that's beautiful is that if you crafted your interactive story powerfully, you crafted it with real practitioners, your alternative options will be, the distractors as we call them, will be absolutely an indication of their learning, of their bias, of what's happening. And then you can start saying, okay, so this one went down. Look, everybody's getting this one right, but these two are staying the same. So where are we missing the gap? Where are we missing the gap? Where is the gap, right? What's happening that they're not getting this one? Is it that we really focus too much on the technical aspect of this and not enough on the emotional aspect of selling? Is it that we're dropping the ball with this module? Like, let's look at it, right? So now you have some data points, because if your scenarios are based on things that actually are real decisions in the real world, and they're real decisions where people mess up, then all of a sudden it'll be extremely blatant when there's gaps in the resources that you're providing. And because you're able to compare the data from, let's say, look at it as ID terms, pre-test and post-test, you can compare the results, which is awesome. Because you guess what? You have access to that, right? You don't need a special team to be set up. You don't need permission from, you know, the head of state. You can just look at the data in the LMS, or just gather the data from no subjective, smile sheets required. It's not necessary at all. And so that's what I think is awesome. That's what I think you can leverage. Now, as you know, interactive storytelling is what we do now. This is it. And for me, it doesn't replace training. What it does is it awakens people to the possibilities and gives you some opportunities to tap into the reasons why people really aren't engaging with the training, right? It gives you a way to actually show them a future that could be theirs and have impact in their lives, which is, I think, one of the most amazing things you can do in your life, is have impact that way. Feel like you've made other people's lives better. So if that sounds like something you want to get really good at, And if that's something that you want to pursue in a real way, like it's not just another thing to keep you busy, but it's actually something that you're like, man, this sounds like I could really take myself to the next level with this. And if you're the kind of person who wants to get better at getting and giving feedback in the pro way, and if you're the kind of person who understands that all good things take time and isn't looking for some sort of magic button like storytelling download and checklist, it's more than that. It's you becoming a really good collaborator, you know, a really good collaborator. Then this is for you. Then I'd love to talk to you because maybe we can work together and maybe you can join our community if you're a good fit. All right, so I hope you have a wonderful rest of the day and that you take care of yourself. You hug somebody today, and if you don't, send them a virtual hug because people need hugs these days, and I can't wait to give some people hugs, by the way, it's very soon. And also, if you enjoyed this, please let me know. Reach out on LinkedIn, make sure you connect. Or give this a rating. I'd love to hear what you have to think about the information that I share, and it lets me know that you find it valuable or not. All right, whatever. I don't care. Just give me honest feedback. I love that. All right. Take care, everybody. Bye.